Hey guys, if you want updates on our latest episodes, then be sure to subscribe to the Film Colossus podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Also, if you'd like to support the show and hear episodes ad-free, then subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmcolossus.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
My name is Chris Lambert.
And my name is Travis Bean. And on today's episode, we give our reactions to the 2024 Oscar nominations. Chris is nice and gives praise where praise is due, while Travis mostly complains because the dumb movies he likes don't get any love from the Academy. Plus, we give our predictions for each category.
And Travis, what are you wearing today?
Well, as you can see, I'm going minimalist today. I've got on a t-shirt and nothing else.
All right. Well, I realized that this bit would be better for the actual Oscars episode after I asked than the preview episode, because who's dressing up for the previews?
You know? We do. That's what we do around here.
We do. I'm in full tuxedo.
Yeah. A bright blue tuxedo. Light blue. Baby blue.
Yeah, I'm not doing the traditional nonsense, you know?
No.
I'm going baby blue. Got a style, got a profile.
Yeah. Clown shoes are an interesting choice.
Well, I need a boxier, wider toe profile, you know?
If anybody should be wearing clown shoes for this episode, it's me. People are just going to be saying I'm a clown with all these opinions.
Yeah, you feel trepidatious about that. I mean, your whole thing is being a champion of the look down upon movies. So discussions of the movies that are like the awards contention, it's almost like the opposite of.
I think I strike a healthy balance. I do like to champion lesser known and look down upon movies and try to give them a second chance. And I guess people can call that like being a contrarian, but like I truly on an emotional level, like my relationship with movies, like I just find something in those movies that appeals to me more and I feel like I relate to a little bit more and just becomes part of the experience. Whereas, you know, something like Oppenheimer, it's hard for me to like get on the same level as people and see the transcendence and think like, oh, this changes everything. Or I'm just like, I don't know. I watched like a low budget 80s thriller that was like way better than this, but whatever. but at the same time, you know, like I think if a movie works well, like I think Past Lives is great. I'm trying to think of other Oscar movies that I actually like. Past Lives is good. I don't know. The Holdovers is good. I definitely don't dismiss movies that are in that arena. I think I just have a hard time caring about them like everyone else does, which makes me a great person to host this kind of episode.
I know. Well, this is maybe a better episode for it than the actual Oscar reaction, because in this one, we're going through the nominations and discussing which ones we like, which ones we think other people are probably going to pick, but also getting to maybe throw in some of the movies that didn't get nominated mm-hmm. that we just want to highlights for people or give some praise.
Yeah, for sure.
And that is perfect for you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to say people should get nominated that nobody's in a million years would ever put on you know, nominations like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then
80 for Brady, it's a lot of good supporting cast in there.
What does?
80 for Brady, the like every year, it seems like now they make like an old person ensemble movie. And this one had like Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin and Rita Moreno and Sally Field, you know, titans of industry right there. And they all get together to go on a they want to go to the Super Bowl So they all go to the Super Bowl. And it's just like a rom-com kind of with really old people.
Wow. They really are just Tom Brady fans.
Yeah.
Going to a Super Bowl.
80 for Brady.
80 for Brady. That's one of those movies that somebody thought of the rhyme and then they built a movie around
they
it.
They got it greenlit from the name. And they're like, go make a movie.
Go write it. And they're like, all right, 80 for Brady. Is it the Brady Bunch? Is it Tom Brady? Who's the Brady?
Doesn't matter. Make it.
Well, let's going through. We're starting off with best visual effects.
We are. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We're starting at the bottom and rising our way up to the top.
Okay. And are you what site are you on? Because I'm on the Academy site.
Wikipedia's.
All right, I'm just going to go to 96th. Wikipedia then.
Yeah. It seems to have them kind of power ranked.
All
so,
right.
Visual effects is at the very bottom.
That's what I like to hear. All right.
Yeah. The Creator, Godzilla Minus One, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, which they changed the name of to just Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning.
I saw that and I was like, did they really do that? Is that really what happened? And the next one's going to have a new name? Because if they did that, that's really dumb. It's advertised in the movie. The title is Part 1.
Yeah. Are they changing the title on all?
Not the one I watched.
It streams? Did you stream it? Did you buy it?
Yeah, I streamed it on Paramount.
Crazy. Okay. And then Napoleon.
I've seen two of these movies, so that makes me very qualified to...
You've seen The Creator in Dead Reckoning?
Yes.
Nice. Which of those would be your pick?
I think The Creator was, as far as visual effects go, it wasn't my favorite movie, and I'm a big Gareth Edwards fan, but it wasn't my favorite movie. But as far as visual effects and, you know, all those robots, and I think the best part of his aesthetic is just how he's able to navigate these ethereal, like, just like extraterrestrial terrains and like bring power and breadth. Like, I thought he did a great job with all that. So I would definitely say The Creator out of the two I've seen.
Yeah, between those two, I would definitely say The Creator. I guess Dead Reckoning, you have to nominate it because of the jump alone, which was crazy seeing people were posting the videos of what it actually looked like behind the scenes versus what it looked like in movie, and you're seeing it side by side. And it's a huge ramp that he just goes flying off of. Didn't they say he did it like 14 times that day?
I'm sure he did.
They just built it up to look like this mountain. So pretty wild in terms of some of the visual effects they accomplished on that movie. But The parachute going through the train, which we talked about. You blew my mind earlier before we started recording because you mentioned that just would have destroyed his entire body breaking through the wall of a train. I was like, oh, yeah.
He's like Fast and Furious level superhero. Like, nothing hurts him.
No, he's good.
You could do that and, like, not even have a scratch on you. Like, he gets up and just, like, starts moving.
Yeah, he's fighting people immediately. Like, I'm Ethan Hunt. I've seen all five of these.
Of course you have.
You know, it's weird. Like, the Guardians of the Galaxy really did have some insane visual effects. But at this point, I feel like if your whole movie's mostly just CGI with some like green screen acting, I don't know if that's more impressive than like what Dead Reckoning was doing. At that point, you're just mostly making an animated movie.
Yeah.
Nah. So the Creator blending it well, fit well. Godzilla Minus One, I think, is going to be the popular pick for a lot of people. It looked amazing. Like, the budget, people made like a big to do about the budget. I think they were saying that it was only like $15 million, and then the director came in and was like, I wish we had that budget.
Yeah,
so it seems like it was even less than what they were saying. But as good as the movie looked, it also was very limited in the amount of Godzilla that was on screen. So it's like you get these really nice pops of Godzilla, but I didn't think it was necessarily enough Godzilla.
More Godzilla, says Chris Lambert. That's your review of every movie, though.
every movie is just like more Godzilla. Could have used more Godzilla.
Roland Emmerich's Godzilla? That was enough Godzilla.
Was it though?
No, he kind of hide. You know, he has these like all these scenes where he's hiding in the city, like he's like a little kid running away from his parents.
I remember being really mad about that when I saw it in theaters.
I love it.
I was just like, we never get to see that much Godzilla.
Is that like to you when that kind of shit is happening? Is that like Megatron getting jumbled up in the wires?
It was Optimus, and yes,
Optimus.
It's the same. It's same thing.
What did I
was
I
so
say?
Megatron.
Okay.
I was so annoyed. I like how it's the same thing to you.
Whatever.
Like,
they're all, just combine them in the one. Power Rangers style.
I think Napoleon would be my pick for this. Just
is that
because
visual effect? Like, don't you think of like special effects when it comes to that though?
Yeah, but there was like just enough with the battles. I feel like for the war parts of it, or the burning of St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
Moscow, the burning of Moscow. There were just like moments throughout to where it felt like the other movies, I feel like I could distinctly tell what was real and what wasn't real. And Napoleon's the one where you could tell me everything was visual effects and I was taken for a ride. Or that it was all practical, and I had no idea.
Yeah, I do wonder about that, because to me, if it's just like, if we're just praising like the fight scenes or something, to me that's production design. But you know, I'm not an expert on these matters.
Yeah, I'd go Napoleon or
sure.
I guess I mean, like Godzilla minus one.
I'm okay. Ridley Scott, just give him all the shit. Like, he should win.
Otherwise, like visual effects, I don't even know what other movies from
There's Fast X.
Fast X.
Fast X is better than all five of these put together.
I would put Fast X in there over Dead Reckoning, I think.
For sure.
Or Guardians of the Galaxy.
I would just get rid of all five of them and just have Fast X be the only nominee.
I could even see like Cocaine Bear being in here.
For sure. That'd be great. This is my problem with the Oscars. Like, let's award movies like this, especially in a category like this. It's at the bottom of the Wikipedia power rankings. It's probably the first one they're going to give out. Like, kick off the show with the Bane and give Megan, you know, best visual effects or some shit.
Right. People would be surprised. They'd be shocked. You'd make.
Yeah, sorry.
You'd shock the world.
I'm going to say, like, I'm looking down my list. Like, there's plenty of movies here. Like, the new Insidious movie had great, like, a horror movie would be a great pick. Rebel Moon's better than all of these movies with that, easily. Like, there's so many good options here. Barbie?
Even Barbie?
Come
on. Right? Is that production design?
I mean, yeah, I'm sure it got production design, right? It had to.
It did. But, I mean, even something like...
They did do a lot of practical stuff in that movie, I guess.
I saw this Bollywood movie, Jawan. Jawan was more visually impressive to me than some of the ones nominated.
Yeah.
Come on, Oscars. Wow.
This is going to be a long episode.
I know. We'll maybe move faster. maybe. Best film editing. Anatomy of a Fall.
This
The
is
Holdovers.
Like, sorry.
Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
This is my thing. Like, immediately, like, I can't just sit around like bitching about the Oscars this whole episode. Like, no one's here to hear that. Maybe some people are. Actually, if you're here for that, like, I'm your savior. But, you know, this kind of stuff, I guess you have to recognize that when they're awarding best film editing, like, they're not really awarding best film editing, are they? Like, these are all just the movies that... It's how the Oscars work. You know, it's just the movies that have gained enough traction, have politically held enough ground over the year, and have hit at just the right moment to get these nominations. It doesn't really have anything to do with, like, what movie had the best editing? Well, let's take a look. Like, people voting on it don't even really know. I mean, it sounds like a very condescending thing to say, but, like, I think that's just the nature of a lot of these awards, especially something like editing, which editing is something I care a lot about and think a lot about in movies. And I look at something like Killers of the Flower Moon, and I'm like, how in the fucking world did something like Killers of the Flower Moon get nominated for best editing? Like, to me, it has kind of bad editing, very inefficient editing, not even the need for a lot of editing. There's a lot of, like, just, like, long scenes with not much happening. I don't know. That's just weird to me. So this whole category I'm looking at and I'm like, how are any of these movies on here?
I mean, I guess to me, mostly if something has bad editing, it's just very choppy. Like, I think of bad editing, I think of Chappie. Or,
you constantly reference movies in this show that I don't think anybody thinks about anymore.
Yeah, nobody cares Chappie. About. Nobody cares about Chappie. Even something, I don't know, just a lot of, like, a ton of quick cuts really bother me.
Yeah, those bother you, yeah. That's been well established.
Like, a ton. But I watched something like Killers of the Flower. Like, there's no real difference to me between the editing in Killers of the Flower Moon and the editing of The Holdovers.
For sure.
Or,
except I mean, that it's worse.
I guess I don't see how.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Other than Killers of the Flower Moon had egregious editing decisions, where The Holdovers to me was just like normal Alexander Payne editing.
Is there like a bad editing decision in Killers of the Flower Moon that jumps out to you?
The scene where I think ostensibly the point of the scene was when Leo is talking to the court and, or no, not Leo. Well, there is a scene where Leo's talking to the court and we're just watching his like his pouty lip face for like five straight minutes. That was bad edit decision. You could infuse a little more energy into that scene. but the scene before that where like the skeevy dude blew up the woman's house and his, or that's not what he's describing though. He's describing that he shot the woman in the head in the forest and hear him explain the whole thing and then it cuts to the scene and you just watch it. Which I feel like ostensibly the point of that scene is like, it's supposed to be, they're supposed to contrast each other. Like we're supposed to hear him like jokingly and mockingly describing the scene and like very nonchalant about it. And then to see like the gruesome reality of it. But to me, the editing was the problem in that instance. Like the way it was cut together, like it took too long. It was too stagnant. It didn't have any punch. Like that to me is the big problem of Killers of the Flower Moon with dealing with such heavy subject matter. Like the editing wasn't very heavy. Like it was a little stagnant and just kind of listlessly stringing things together.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Interesting. I mean, I can see that. It makes me laugh because I'm thinking of Zone of Interest and how that would be my pick for like best editing. It didn't get nominated for best editing, but it also has the least amount of editing of any movie I saw in 2023. It's just so many long takes and distanced, like the camera's constantly at a distance from people. Mm-hmm. So you feel very kind of immersed in the moment, but it's also pretty low energy in that way. As a lot of the energy is coming just from the observational power of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's, I like the sound of that. Like it's easy to pick something like Barbie, which is edited together really well, in terms of like thinking of that whole opening and the way it's building to that moment where Barbie says like, do you ever think about death? Like, that's good editing. Like that was built to, and like, but you don't it's easier to nominate a movie like that kind of like has a quicker pace, where like what you're describing of Zone of Interest, that sounds interesting to me. It's how the editing evokes a feeling, and and advances the aesthetic, you know, and all that.
Yeah, and Barbie, do you even get an editing nomination?
Oppenheimer will get it. Why are we even talking about it?
It's annoying to me because I'll say this over and over again when we talk about Christopher Nolan. He has one move that he goes back to that makes all of his movies feel more powerful than they are. And it's the editing trick of making everything feel like a montage and having these sections of the movie where you cross cut between like two or three things happening and putting just a singular score over the top of all of it. So it all feels like it's building to something. And it's very like simple kind of scenes and simple things that are happening that feel more interconnected and dependent and bigger than what they are because of the editing flow and the score. And you can see it in every single movie he does when you start like going through his filmography. And I think it's gotten worse since Inception. He was doing it before Inception, but since Inception, yeah. I think it's become something that he's really, really leaned into. And Oppenheimer's like the pinnacle of that style coming together.
And that's the problem with Oppenheimer is the editing of Oppenheimer is it kind of works in something like Inception, the way it's the momentum you're feeling is in line with the movie. The problem to me with Oppenheimer is it doesn't really have any momentum because like it's not that interesting of a movie. Like it needs the editing to make it feel what it isn't, you know?
Yeah.
So he's employing this age-old tactic that he uses for his really intense movies to make a movie that's pretty boring seem more intense. Like it's not in line with what the movie is doing. It's not giving the movie any strength and advancing anything, you know?
That was the same problem I had with Dunkirk, where he used that same style of editing and kind of the out of order puzzle mechanic to Dunkirk for no other reason, not because the story demanded it in the way that Memento demands it, where it works there, or even something like The Prestige, you can kind of get away with it because there's a form and function to the trick of it all, the magic construction.
Yeah.
Like Dunkirk didn't demand that to the story. He added it to the story, which some people will like, but it was a completely unnecessary thing to do. It's just he had parts of it that were going to be boring if they were told in linear order or in any other way. So he broke it up into this way where the editing is carrying a lot of that movie. Yeah. Oppenheimer will win.
Fast X again. Just get rid of all five and give the Fast X.
Of the ones, of the ones awesome nominated... Editing. I think I would do Poor Things as the winner from the ones nominated. Yeah, I did like the editing of Fast X, though.
Well, I've only seen two, which is Oppenheimer and The Holdovers. And, like, Oppenheimer shouldn't get it, so I guess my pick is The Holdovers. Oh, wait, I've seen Killers of the Flower Moon, of course.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I pretend that I didn't.
Yeah, of course, of course. Best costume design.
Well, hold on. I want to say also that I think any time Steven Soderbergh made a movie in any given year, his movies should be nominated for best editing because he puts all montages in all movies to shame. And Magic Mike's Last Dance has some awesome montages.
Soderbergh directed all the Magic Mike movies?
He did the first one and the third one.
Okay. I don't think I realized that. I'm not a big Soderbergh fan.
Yeah, you wouldn't be.
I remember going to the theater to see Haywire, and I was the only person in the theater, and I'm just sitting there, like, very annoyed with the music choices.
He's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say also, just to put it out there, Insidious: The Red Door has great editing. Patrick Wilson's first directorial movie, the movie he first movie he directed, has some really interesting choices. Like, I just noticed it. I was like, oh, like, somebody's doing something different here, and it's interesting.
I like Patrick Wilson, so...
He's great. He's in a lot of good movies.
Anytime we can praise him, I'm here for it.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on.
Best costume design. We have Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
What costume in Oppenheimer?
I mean, I guess it's a period piece. Yeah. So...
Yeah. Okay. All four of those movies are better than Oppenheimer. Those are all good choices.
I think Oppenheimer's kind of the most boring. I mean, it's accurate to the time, but
This isn't best accurate costume design.
I did like Napoleon's. I mean, I would just give it to Barbie.
Napoleon, yeah. That seems like a good one.
Yeah, but Barbie would be my pick.
I thought you were saying Napoleon. Yeah, no, Barbie definitely should win. It probably will win.
I think so. I don't know if there's one that wasn't nominated that I would put on here, though.
Fast X. Magic Mike's Last Dance is disqualified because they're just not wearing any clothes.
is that not a bold decision for best costume design then?
That would have been a bold decision.
All right, best production design. Or no, best makeup and hairstyling.
Yeah, you're jumping ahead.
I'm jumping. So best makeup and hairstyling. To me, this one is like, there's one far and away winner from all of these. So the nominees are Golda, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and Society of the Snow.
Mm-hmm. You're probably saying Society of the Snow.
Yeah, Society of the Snow, like hands down, far and away.
It seems like a pretty good option for this one.
Yeah, it's like the making these people, like the actors, look completely like healthy and normal to emaciated and like they have been living on a mountainside for 72 days is not an easy thing to do. And how much they were sticking to the historical accuracy of it all, it's a very impressive job.
Cool. Yeah, I like that. I'm looking at this list and I guess I don't have a, I've only seen one of these movies, and I don't think Oppenheimer should get anything, so I don't think it should win. I'm surprised Priscilla's not on here. Like, to me, that is probably the most appealing aspect of Priscilla, is just like the mood and feel of it and how it spends so much time on Priscilla's, her putting on her makeup and doing her hair, and it's such an integral part of the movie's like themes, and just like how, like, you know, Elvis would dress her up like a doll basically, and she would put on this mask and the show and all that. Like, to me, that would have been a good option.
Yeah, I agree. But instead, Oppenheimer.
That and 80 for Brady.
They did it look a day over 73.
Absolutely. They give that movie an Oscar.
Best cinematography, we have El Conde, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
Wow, I didn't know El Conde got nominated. That's cool.
It was the thing coming out of Cannes where I was pretty excited to see the reviews of El Conde, and everybody was trashing it, except they were saying that the cinematography was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I still have to watch it, but...
You say everybody was trashing it? Oh, well, maybe I'll watch it then.
Yeah, it might be right up your alley, Travis.
Best movie of 2023 right there.
I've seen three of these. I haven't seen Conde or Maestro.
I have not seen those two either, but I have not seen Poor Things. Poor Things, I mean, are we giving out Oscars for fisheye lens shots? Like your abundance of fisheye lens shots?
There are so many, but
of course
also I did find the cinematography like more exciting in Poor Things than I did in most other things of 2023. Zone of Interest to me should win. Like, it should have been nominated. It should have won. Hands down, the most interesting, dynamic, and coolest cinematography of any movie of 2023.
Cool. Yeah, I like that. Cinematography, again, I'm surprised Barbie's not in there.
Yeah, that's surprising, too. I guess this is where you make a car commercial joke. But
I just, like... We've gone through two, like, I'm not the hugest fan of Barbie. Like, we talked about it on our episode, and, like, I liked it. I watched it again with friends, and to me, it didn't quite hold up as well. Like, there are parts of that movie I like a lot, but I don't think it's all that in a bag of chips anymore. But even with that, we've gone through two categories right now, and we're like, Barbie should be nominated for this. Like, this is what Barbie was good at, makeup and hair, like, cinematography. Like, these are the things we want to praise movies for, you know?
Yeah, and instead...
Weird decision. Nope. Like that, Killers with the Flower Moon's over. Like, I guess I just don't understand like how that happened.
I do think Killers was the best cinematography that
Scorsese
has had in his filmography.
In his filmography?
Yeah, in terms of just some of the shots of, like, a lot of the landscape shots, a lot of the framing of certain things, like the shot of the men through the window during the fire, and you're seeing the blurred, like, shadow figures of them.
Yeah, that was a cool scene.
There are just a lot of very dynamic and interesting shots that I don't think we've gotten in his other films.
That was a
where
cool...
he's taking a lot more risks.
That was a cool 20-second scene in that 3.5-hour movie, yeah.
That's true.
See, again, going back to, like, editing, to me, the cinematography, like, it needs to enhance, like, it needs to, that's the thing with these, like, I guess it's on the level of people on Twitter just posting pictures from a movie and, like, oh, look how great this looks. And, like, to me, that's not cinematography. Like, a cool shot isn't best cinematography. Like, cinematography should, it's the way a movie flows and moves and feels. Like, it's something deeper than, like, what it's become, I think.
Oh, I always just think it's prettiest shots.
Yeah, no. I mean, Scorsese always has pretty shots in his movie. He should win it every year if that's the case.
I don't think so.
The way he blocks scenes and, like, has big crowds moving, like, his cinematography is pretty much always top notch. Those were the best moments to me in Killers of the Flower Moon, when it's when he's, like, navigating a bunch of people all at once. But beyond that, just, like, shots of pretty things isn't best cinematography.
That's true. Like, the way that things flow, like, happen in a scene, the blocking of a scene.
For sure.
But if that's the case, Babylon should have won Best Cinematography in 2022. So, ha! I know you don't agree with that.
I definitely don't, but I think we could get into that, too. We shouldn't. That was last year's Oscars.
Yeah, I mean, of the nominees, Poor Things would be my pick.
Sure. Yeah, Poor Things. Fisheye lens. I want to reward people using the fisheye lens.
It's cool. It kind of goes. It has, like, a function of the form, I think, or has at least, like, some thematic relevance.
I think Nolan should use them in his next movie, so I don't feel like I'm watching the same fucking movie again.
That won't happen.
I know.
Best production design. We have Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
This is where Barbie thrives. Like, all those, like, building those big houses and stuff, and, like, all Barbie land, like, that, it should win for that alone.
Yeah, it's a pretty simple conversation to me for that. Like, Barbie invented, like, a whole microcosm.
Yeah.
And was fun, clever, like, runner-up to Napoleon for me.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, Napoleon, that would be a strong suit of it.
Best sound. We have The Creator, Maestro, Mission Impossible, Oppenheimer, and The Zone of Interest.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess The Creator. It's the only movie on this list I like that I've seen.
Yeah, you haven't seen Maestro or Zone of Interest here.
I have not. I mean, I thought Mission Impossible was okay, but I don't know if I'd give it any awards.
Yeah, no. It's weird. I feel like that's, like, they campaigned hard, so people voted. Zone of Interest is another clear winner here. Like, one of the gimmicks of the movie is its sound design. The same way that one of Barbie's gimmicks is, like, not gimmick, but, you know, like, production design, hair and makeup. It's just kind of where Barbie thrives. Like, sound, Zone of Interest is specifically constructed to play with sound, use sound. Like, the soundscape is on a whole other level than most films.
Cool. I like that.
Yep. Best original song, Travis.
Oh, gosh. This is the first time I'm looking at this. I'm like, do I know any of these movies? I guess I know the Barbie ones.
Yeah, The Fire Inside from Flaming Hot, I'm Just Ken from Barbie, It Never Went Away from American Symphony.
Huh. I don't know that one.
Warjaji, a song from my people, Warjaji, from Killers of the Flower Moon, and What Was I Made For from Barbie.
Yeah, is that the song that plays at the end of the movie?
Yeah, it's the Billie Eilish.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't give it to that one because that's the point of the movie. I'm out. I'm just kidding. That's pretty great. I mean, I guess I don't know the other ones, though. Like, I saw Killers of the Flower Moon, but asking me to remember anything in that 3.5 hour movie is tough. So I guess that song was probably good, but I don't remember it.
It's What Was I Made For for me. It makes me cry every time I hear it, even outside of the movie.
Yeah, I think it's okay. I mean, if we're purely just awarding on like how good the song is and not how it worked in the movie, I would pick I'm Just Kidding. Like, to me, that's a better song.
Listen to What Was I Made For with headphones on.
Okay. I'm just going to think about the boring end of the movie when I do that, but okay.
Well, don't do that.
The preachy, monologue-y end of the movie that just won't end. It's like worse than Lord of the Rings.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I saw a comment the other day from Tom Cruise where he talked about one of the Mission Impossible movies, the early screen testings. People were saying that it had too many endings, that in the same way that Lord of the Rings did.
Yeah.
They kept thinking the movie was going to be over and then there'd be another scene. And it was testing very poorly with audiences because of that. So Tom Cruise told them to just have one epic score run over all of the endings. Sound familiar, right?
And Oppenheimer?
Unite all the scenes. And suddenly the screen test went through the roof and everybody loved the movie.
See, Nolan has tapped into what people want.
Yeah, he knows. He knows.
He's like, just do it like 10 times in a movie.
Over and over, nonstop, and it'll work. It's also the secret, like, it's actually the secret of The Dark Knight as well.
Yeah. Yeah, he does it in every movie, of course.
Every movie. Okay, best original score, American Fiction, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Killers of the Flower Moon. Yeah, Oppenheimer and Poor Things.
How dare John Williams do that? Steven Spielberg wasn't directing it. Like, he should have sat out.
Yeah. Solidarity, John. Solidarity.
Although that would have been hilarious. Like, someone else comes in and, like, either has to just, like, John Williams won't let him do the score, so they have to come up with a new one. It's just like a bastardized version of Indiana Jones.
Yeah. It just every fifth note is different.
Every single one of these. This is the other thing I can't stand about the Oscars. Like, every category, it's, like, the same movie. Like, other movies didn't do anything? Come on.
Yeah. I mean, at least Indiana Jones is in this one. But
I guess.
It's the same person that always gets nominated.
Yeah. So anytime John Williams does something, he gets nominated.
Yeah. I don't think I care about best original score. It's like one of the things that I care about the least in the Oscars.
I definitely care and appreciate it at a good... But I can't think of anything, I guess. I mean, I would say scores in movies, they stand out to me less and less as time goes on, like in modern movies. So I'm trying to think of anything that really stood out to me this year. I don't know if I can.
Yeah. So I guess I would give it to Killers of the Flower Moon here, but that's just because I kind of remember it more than any of the others. Yeah.
Killers of the Flower Moon gets nothing from me. I will say I just watched Dumb Money and it at least had an interesting score. It was like, because it's based on the book The Antisocial Network, and it kind of had a Social Network vibe to it. It almost felt like it was trying to be meta or like call out. It seemed absurd to me how similar it was to the Social Network, and it worked well for that movie and like just the energy of that movie. So that was the first time I've noticed a unique score in a while, I feel like. Nice. Even though it wasn't unique and copied the Social Network.
Yeah. Rewatching There Will Be Blood this week, like that's a score that jumps out to me.
I mean, that shit's insane.
Yeah, none of the others here. Eh. Best animated short film. We haven't seen any of these.
Speak for yourself.
Have you seen Letter to a Pig?
I consulted on that movie.
Oh, crazy. So congratulations. I saw it several times. Congratulations.
95 senses. Yeah, no, I don't know any of these.
Yeah, so I'm going to give it to Pachyderm.
I'm going to give it to the one about John and Yoko. Like, give the Beatles a little love.
Oh, yeah, something they've never gotten.
I mean, I don't know if the Beatles ever won an Oscar.
That might be true.
They're not going to get an Oscar here, but tangentially they will.
Best live action short film. Also, haven't watched any of these.
Nope.
So I'm going to give it to Night of Fortune.
I did see the Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar.
Oh, how was it?
Yeah, it's good. You know, it's just Wes Anderson. If you like Wes Anderson, it's good. If you don't, you probably won't like it.
Great.
It just does all the stuff he does.
Yeah, so I probably wouldn't like it.
Probably not.
Best documentary short film? Also, nope. I'm going to give that one to The Barber of Little Rock.
I'm going to give it to The ABCs of Book Banning, because book banning's stupid, and I assume that despair or just talks about how stupid it is. So I give it to that one.
Okay. Hopefully that, you know, I would imagine that it's not about the pros of book banning.
Or just like literally, like, here's how you ban a book. Like, step one.
That would actually be pretty amazing. Best documentary feature film. I haven't watched any documentaries from 2023.
Did I watch any doc? I actually did, but nothing that would be on this list.
Okay.
Four Daughters I thought looked cool. That is Arabic language. I just like, it seemed like I had a meta concept, and I feel like a lot of movies out of just like that region, I think, I mean, obviously this isn't the same country, but I'm thinking of like Abbas Kiarostami or Jafar Panahi, like they always have meta elements in their movies, and that one has it, and it's just conceptually it sounds cool to me.
Nice, good pick.
Yeah.
Best international feature, we have Io Capitano, Perfect Days, Society of the Snow, The Teacher's Lounge, and The Zone of Interest, which, interestingly enough, Anatomy of a Fall did not get nominated by France because the director, Justine Triet, or is it Trite? Triet, kind of disparaged the Academy for the country, or like the country's like filmmaking body. So they refused to nominate Anatomy of a Fall for Best Feature. Huh? So it did not make the international feature film list.
That shouldn't matter. That's stupid.
I know. Yeah, because you have to, each country has to submit one representative film.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of these. I assume Chris would pick The Zone of Interest.
Yeah, 1,000%.
I would have definitely said Fallen Leaves should have been in this category. I know it was a... It was like kind of on the edge. Like people wouldn't have been surprised if it was nominated. But to me, that was probably the best foreign movies I've seen this year.
I'm looking forward to that one. I need to see it.
It's a movie. It's interesting. It's about two lonely people. It's very straightforward. It's a short movie. It's checking a lot of boxes I like from modern movies these days. but it has a cool element that is about how we use art to relate to each other and to get us through tough times. And yeah, it just does a lot of interesting things in a low-key what kind of way.
Nice. Yeah, I know it's been like relatively popular too.
Yeah.
Just in like more of the like people who love films, like in finding like little unknown films, it's gotten some like traction.
Yeah.
What do we got now? We have best animated feature. Which you know, the movie that I would pick for this did not make the list, which is a bit of a shame.
What is that?
It is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem.
Oh, yeah. That's surprising it didn't get nominated.
I know. I don't know what about it would keep it from a nomination, which is a bit of a shame.
Huh.
But, yeah, it was not on there. So what we got for best animated features: The Boy and the Heron, Elemental, Nimona, Robot Dreams, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. That's it. There was another line on there that made it seem like there was another movie, but that's just because there were so many people involved in Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Yeah. I would imagine Spider-Man's going to win. I mean, they could give it to The Boy and the Heron, but I feel like Hayao Miyazaki just doesn't get anything anymore from the Oscars.
He could, because people still think this might be his last movie, even though they've already said he's working on a new
movie.
He's
done this before.
I know, yeah. Cries wolf over and over. But Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is just such an epic film. It loses some of the magic of the first one, but it's still really well done, still really relevant, special. It feels dynamic. It feels like something new and fresh in terms of the animation style and just the, I don't know. It's kind of a legendary movie where The Boy and the Heron's okay.
I mean, I love that style of animation. Like, you don't really see that anymore. But you also don't see what Spider-Man does. It's kind of a two completely different camps there.
Yeah, Boy and the Heron animation's amazing. Like, just to say that, it's just, I was thinking of the story,
the plot, the story, payoff, I guess,
of everything.
More, yeah. More rewarding here.
Yeah, like the movie on a whole, but like the animation, yeah, Boy and the Heron.
Yeah,
should get nominated.
I haven't seen Spider-Man, but I'm sure it's. I really enjoyed the first movie, so I'm sure the sequel's great. But I've only seen The Boy and the Heron, so that's my pick.
Okay, I know. Looking at the Letterboxd, like, you know, trending movies right now, Nimona's picking up some steam.
Ooh.
So it seems cool. I just saw the poster and it looks pretty interesting. So I might watch that soon.
Cool.
Best adapted screenplay. We have American Fiction, based on the novel Erasure. Barbie, based on the characters of Barbie. Oppenheimer, based on the biography of American Prometheus. Poor Things, based on the novel Poor Things, and then Zone of Interest, which is based on the novel Zone of Interest.
I don't even know why I'm going down this path, because people have probably already talked about this and people have come to a decision about what counts as an adapted screenplay, but Barbie, it's based on characters who aren't in a book, so like, it's adapted? Okay.
Yeah, this was, when the nominations came out, people were thinking that it was going to get original screenplay because she's kind of coming up with things out of nowhere. But an argument for it that I saw even some like screenwriters saying is just, if there's pre-existing material and you're not creating all original characters and concept, then it goes into adapted screenplay. It doesn't have to be adapted from a book or a TV show or a movie or a play or anything like that. It's just if it's a pre-existing thing. So that makes sense to me.
I guess it does.
A lot of the Barbie characters are modeled on the fact that like a Beach Ken did exist, right? Like this style, like this other kind of Barbie did exist. So you're still basing it, even if the story is original, the concept is not.
Yeah. All right, I'm just, again, just going to accept it and move on, because like I look at Maestro and I'm like, well, that's about a real person, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, that is pretty insane. Like, I feel like at that point, if it's based on like a real person, that should just go into adapted, right?
If this is going to be your reasoning that, like, an adapted screenplay, if it's based on characters that aren't real, like, I don't know. Like, it's just because the characters aren't real, it seems silly.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Because especially, you're just adapting their, like, life.
Yeah.
You're not coming up with, like, an original character or an original story for them. It's all right there for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's based on a Wikipedia page.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's probably all that's probably all the research Bradley Cooper did.
I feel kind of torn on this one because my default is to just say Zone of Interest. But I wonder if how you feel on this. Do you think best adapted screenplay should be the one that is the closest to the story or the aims of the original work? Or because Zone of Interest pretty much abandons the novel.
Yeah. I would imagine he did that with Under the Skin, so.
Yeah, it's so different because in the novel, it's like a love triangle between different characters who are around the concentration camp. And you have the commandant of the concentration camp. You have an officer who's there, like the wife of the commandant, and you're getting into some of the life stuff, but it's very much this kind of like love story and reflection on different topics. And Glazer takes just the idea that it's taking place at a concentration camp and abandons all the other stuff that made up the plot of the book and goes in his own direction with it. So even though the book is the basis of it, there's actually very little in the way of similar material.
Mm-hmm.
So does that count as a adaptation that's like the best adaptation?
I mean, I feel like you have to just disregard that when it comes to it. It honestly, as you're saying that, it makes me realize how stupid it is to have two categories, I guess. It should just be best screenplay. Because, yeah, like what differentiator is there between original and adapted? If for adapted, the only like you would think like you'd be changing something by separating them into two categories, and the only change you could possibly make is like, well, how well does it represent the material? But obviously that's not the case. There's been so many times where a best adapted screenplay nominee has not followed the book at all. You know, Stanley Kubrick never followed the book. He completely changed it every time. So it's just two categories, and you pick the best one from each category, I guess is all it is.
Yeah, like Anatomy of a Fall in the original screenplay, but it got its title and part of the idea from like another movie. what is it, Anatomy of a Murder? Yeah.
Oh, right, yeah.
Like that was the basis, like I watched Anatomy of a Murder and I wanted to do a courtroom drama like that.
Yeah.
So how is that less of a like an adapted screenplay than what Zone of Interest is doing?
It isn't, and it's dumb.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess adapted screenplay, if I'm thinking of the thing that best, like, it's best representative of what it was, or the best adaptation of what it was, then Poor Things deviates a lot. American Fiction seems pretty on point, but also makes some departure points. I'd be fine with, like, American Fiction, Barbie, or Oppenheimer, I guess.
I would say no to Barbie. Definitely no to Oppenheimer. The other three, I don't know, they seem pretty good. Haven't seen them, but they should win.
Best original screenplay, we have Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Maestro, May December, and Past Lives.
Yeah, just give it to Past Lives.
Yeah, Past Lives.
I would say the writing in that movie is kind of a strong point of it.
Yeah, 1,000%. I think it's most of it.
Yeah, because, you know, nothing against Celine Song. She directed a fine movie, but it's not like the most exciting movie to watch. Like, you're really compelled by the situation and what they're talking about and going through more.
Yeah. I guess a good runner up is Anatomy of a Fall for just being. That's one you haven't seen yet, right?
And likely never will.
Really? Why not?
Because it looks boring as shit.
Crazy. Crazy.
And isn't it like 2.5 hours long? I'm getting real sick of these long modern movies that never pay off.
It's a fascinating movie.
I might watch it. I just I'm not interested in watching it. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, if you're okay watching like three like mediocre 1960s film noir movies.
How dare you? I don't even know the last time that happened to me.
I don't think there's like you've watched like a mediocre.
Yeah,
like a number of mediocre.
If it's mediocre 90 minutes though, that's not the same thing as mediocre for 2.5 hours.
No, but if you watch a few of them in a row.
If I sat down and watched a few of them in a row and all in one sitting, you would be right.
Yeah, which you're not doing. But Anatomy of the Fall is like interesting enough. You should at least give the first like 30 minutes a shot. And
see that I don't think this way about movies. Like the first 30 minutes. I'd rather just watch something I'm sure I'm going to like.
Just dip a toe in, Travis. Don't be afraid.
I might watch it.
Don't be afraid.
It looks boring, though.
It's fascinating.
Courtroom drama. I'm never excited about a courtroom drama.
It's dynamic. It's tension-filled.
Yeah, all the courtroom dramas think they are.
Yeah, but this one is.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, you'll hate it. No, but you'll like a music choice. Everybody loves a music choice.
We'll see.
Best Supporting Actress. So here we go. Emily Blunt from Oppenheimer.
No.
Danielle Brooks from The Color Purple. America Ferrera from Barbie.
No.
Jodie Foster in Naiad.
Yeah.
And Divine Joy Randolph in The Holdovers.
Jodie Foster. Anytime Jodie Foster acts in a movie, like, she should just automatically win.
I'm watching the new True Detective season right now.
I watched the first two
episodes. Yeah, she's so
the best.
Good. Yeah, and everything. The show is not very good.
The show is pretty unfathomable.
And just in quality?
It's a ridiculous show. I can't figure out what it's trying to do or say, what the aesthetic is, like if I'm supposed to laugh or like... I'm not a huge... I've seen all of True Detective, and I wouldn't say I'm like a huge fan of the show. Like, I'm not like a day one-er and like think like, oh, it should be like the... Like, I'm okay with them doing a departure, but I don't even know what this is. It feels like a really weak Twin Peaks knockoff.
We're watching this and Fargo season 5 at the same time, and Fargo's been so damn boring, and then True Detective is also incredibly boring.
Yeah.
The thing that's been the most annoying to me... It was the second episode, they unlock the phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they see the clip from the guy at the beginning when he's like making the Instagram video about the food. And the guy behind him starts like shaking and then goes, "She's awake." And things happen. Nobody's talked about it. In the third episode, nobody talked. Like, they don't go back to it. They're not like freaking out. Do you see this thing? What do they mean? Why is he shaking? This is right where we found the tongue. That should be all anybody's talking about.
They're too busy getting to whatever boring C plot they have going on.
It's insane. Like, I'm so annoyed because that's something in Fargo that happens a lot. Like, something will happen that should be a thing that everybody obsesses over. And everybody's kind of like, well, we'll just come back to it later. We'll do something else. You know, when it's relevant to where we finally want the plot to go, we'll care.
Yeah. I don't know. I was just thinking of this one moment in the second episode. I think this is the moment where I was finally like, fuck this. I'm done. It was like when the kid, Jodie Foster's like little protege, he's sitting in the ice rink with the girl. Is it Jodie Foster's daughter? I think is in there with him.
Stepdaughter.
And he says something like, she like looks at his face. It's like, oh, did he hit you again? And he's like, oh, my dad, he grew up in a abusive environment. And she's like, so did you. And like, you didn't turn out this way. And I'm just saying, like, oh my fucking God. Like, they're just speaking everything to me. Like, everything I need to know and understand, like things I can just get from watching the show. Like, it's my problem with TV is it's so inefficient and dragged out so much. Like, they have to do everything they can to like stretch it to an hour episode, and it includes having to name conversations like this. I was just sitting there like, no, I'm not giving any more time to this show.
Yeah, that's more than fair. I'm gonna keep watching it so I can write about it at the end, but I'm like pretty unhappy about having to do so.
I just compare it to like the first season of True Detective. Like, I'd watch an entire show that's Matthew McConaughey talking. So to me, it just doesn't even come close to season 1.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice if it if it did.
He should pop up.
They did mention, you know, the guy in the one episode that's like the manifestation in the snow.
Yeah.
Just like a...
His name's Travis. Snow. I do remember him.
Travis Cole. And Matthew McConaughey's character is Rusty Cole.
Really?
Yeah. So people are thinking that it's like his... He said he spent time in Alaska too. That it's like his like dad or something, or grandpa or something.
Oh man, I did not remember his name was Rusty in that show, but that makes me so happy that it was.
Yeah, or Rust, you know, Rust Cole.
Rust, that's even better.
Right. Right. Rust. Okay.
Anyway, yeah, no. The whole America Ferrera being on here, I really don't get that. Like, I just don't think she really has anything to... She has the one scene where she gives, like, the speech. I guess that's why she got the nomination. But that's my thing about... We've talked about this with Best Actor nominations before. And, like, what... To me, it's really tough for me to get behind somebody who's been nominated for Best Actor or Best Actress when, like, their character's weak. Or when their character, like... isn't a real character and is just there for like one reason, like, and then Barbie, her reason for being there is just like a message. I just don't see how that's like best acting, you know?
Yeah, that's, it's weird to me because it seems like the best supporting nominees for actor and actress, it's always just, do you have one scene? I mean, it's not even that, because you look at De Niro's character in Killers of the Flower Moon, and he's a pretty major part of that movie. Sterling K. Brown in American Fiction is like a major part of that movie. Ken in the Barbie movies, like a major part of that movie.
Yeah.
Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things, a major part of that movie. Robert Downey Jr. in Oppenheimer, a major part in that movie. It feels kind of lopsided because, I mean, Gloria is a major part of Barbie. Like, Kitty's a major part of Oppenheimer, but not really in the same way. So it's like America, you have a few reaction scenes and the speech, and it's a great speech and she does an awesome job.
Yeah.
But
she's a good actress.
The character isn't given enough to do compared to like Ken, right? Where like Kitty in Oppenheimer isn't given enough to do. She has one scene where she gets to like really pop off, but the rest of her character is incredibly underwritten. And it's like, do you reward the director? Do you reward the film for underwriting a lot of these characters?
Yeah.
It's kind of annoying.
Like, I think the writing for characters like Ken and Barbie, like, are pretty good. Like, you see their story, you see the catharsis, the climax, like, it has a build, you understand, like, oh, like, they really nailed this moment. Like, I just think, like, America Ferrera's character and Barbie, like I said, it's just, like, a moment where, like, the movie just announces its intentions and like kind of ham-fistedly moves the plot a certain way, like because of this speech. I don't know. It just seems silly. Like if she was a full-blooded character and this moment hit a little harder, I'd get it, but it doesn't.
I think about something like May December and how don't you nominate
man, nominate Julianne Moore every year.
Yeah. Julianne Moore for that role, because that's like incredibly impressive. Or, do you not nominate, like, Mia Goth in Infinity Pool? I know Infinity Pool's, like, a much lower caliber movie than some of these. But her performance is wacky, over the top, demanding. Is that... I guess, like, screen time shouldn't be the end-all be-all, but the amount of character work that has to go on, it just feels like you didn't necessarily get that in Oppenheimer or Barbie from... those characters.
No.
I mean, even this will be probably the most controversial take, I think, of the whole show.
Get ready,
but,
people.
Like, all the actors, both Divine Joy Randolph's character and what's his face? Best actor, Paul Giamatti's character in The Holdovers. I don't think either of those characters had enough to do that should get them an award nomination. Like, they were both really good with what they had, but I don't think those roles We're asking enough, doing enough, demanding enough to the point where it should be more than they were really good in those roles, not
right.
They were the top five of everybody who acted in a movie this year.
I think they both did a great job. I think their characters have plenty. I mean, obviously, Divine Joy Radoff, she's a supporting actress, so she isn't supposed to have as much. And her character kind of, I liked what they did with her character, how she kind of just like exits the movie for a little bit. And all you get of her is just like laughing with her sister. Like, it's just like a really nice, calm, quiet moment that says everything you need to know about her situation and her moving on from her son's death and all that. But I also get the point that, like, well, like, if she was given more to do, if we saw her overcoming this a little bit more, like, that's what we want from the best supporting actress. I could go either way on that. I still think she's awesome in it, and I would be okay with her winning. I would definitely be okay if Paul Giamatti would. I think Paul Giamatti's character, he has a lot to do with his character in that movie.
To me, it's just, like, a character that you'd see in every, like, kind of comedy drama from the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's a great performance, but I wouldn't give it like a best actor nominee over something like, I mean, I know you're not a Ari Aster fan, but the amount of work that Joaquin Phoenix sure. has to do yeah. in Bo is Afraid
mm-hmm.
is so insane.
Yeah, you like going by that, though. For you, it's another math equation. Like, he did the most.
It's just the movie asked so much of him.
Yeah.
And he's delivering on all these different facets and
well, you like the movie too. Like, you think his character's well written. So, like, to me, that's a big part of it. Like, if the character's like not good, like, how good can your acting be?
Yeah.
that's as far as I'll take it. That's my problem with Margot Robbie in Babylon, is like, she's working her ass off, but like, is she the best? Like, I can't say she's the best because like, her character sucks.
Yeah, but is she believable? Is she like going places
yeah,
with it?
But I mean, if that's the case, Margot Robbie's going to win every year because she's such a good actress. Like, give it to her every year. Of course, she's that good.
Zac Efron in Ironclaw.
Yeah, give it to Zac Efron.
He was already in good shape, right? So it's not a stretch for him to get into better shape. But the stuff he had to do to like look the part. He had to learn wrestling, the dynamic performance he had to give. How is that not best actor material over, like, kind of a... I mean, Paul Giamatti is amazing, but what The Holdovers is asking him to do is a tried and true, like, comedy, drama... I don't know. I just don't think it's that demanding in a way that... If you're not honoring other genres and not honoring other films because they're more of a genre film,
I think it is. I think his character goes through a lot of fluctuations and has like contradictions and has to like grapple with those contradictions. I think there's a lot going on there. Like, to me, that he actually has a ton to deal with in that movie. So I don't know if I agree with that.
I mean, there's a lot that he has to like.
You just
his
don't think
backstory
the character's written
forming.
Well, I guess.
The character's written fine. I just think the ceiling is low.
Okay, sure. I guess Paul Giamatti getting nominated, like, that was an obligatory nomination because that character, in my mind, is just the character from Sideways grown up. and he got a nomination for Sideways, so, like, well, he automatically gets one because it's the same character.
See, that's even more in favor of my argument of you're just doing something that was already like kind of a established.
Yeah.
But best supporting actor, I mean, of those listed, I didn't see Naiad and I haven't seen The Color Purple yet. The trailer for Color Purple was making me cry. So I feel like if I watched the movie, I'd just give it to Daniel Brooks. But since I haven't... watch Naiad or Color Purple from like Oppenheimer, Barbie, and Holdovers, I'd still give it to Divine Joy Randolph.
I think she kind of has it in my bag.
Despite my like criticisms of it, I still think it's like a more nuanced role and a better role than the other movies.
I think she'll probably win.
Probably. Best supporting actor, we went over the nominations, but Sterling K. Brown, Robert De Niro, Robert Downey Jr., Ryan Gosling, and Mark Ruffalo.
I guess it seems like Robert Downey Jr. is going to win with one of those kind of like honorary Oscars, you know?
Yeah.
Which in that sense, considering I think the Oscars are really, really stupid and then supporting the best of anything is a dumb idea. Like, sure, just give it to the guy who should have gotten it 20 years ago.
What should he have gotten it for?
Just anything. He's so good. He gets okay. it for the culmination of his career.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I mean, he was, I think, the best part of Oppenheimer.
Yeah, he's great.
The energy he had in it, the attitude of it, it was just such a cool performance. I was really happy that Sterling K. Brown got nominated because as I was watching American Fiction, I was like, Sterling K. Brown is stealing this movie.
He's great.
And it's a shame that he's not going to get nominated. And then he did, so I was really happy. But Mark Ruffalo's performance in Poor Things was so next level to me.
I'm excited to see this because I heard you talk about this. And to me, he's kind of an actor who kind of just, he can do one thing a little bit too much, you know? Like, he doesn't branch out enough.
Yeah, that's how I felt. Like, I know Mark Ruffalo. And then I watched this, I was like, Mark? Is that you? Mark, you're giving that line delivery? You're playing this character? Mark, look at you go. So part of me wants to give it to Ruffalo here. But I think I'd still maybe go Sterling K. Brown.
Yeah. I mean, I think Ryan Gosling fucking earned it. Like, I think he's... Because it's pretty rare somebody wins an Oscar for comedy. And I think he's fucking hilarious in that movie. So I would be okay if he won.
I would also be very okay. I almost kind of forgot about him, even though I was staring at his name. Yeah, the performance was legendary.
Robert De Niro has 2 Oscars. We don't need to give him another one.
Oh, so he does have Oscars.
Well, De Niro does, yeah.
Oh, De Niro.
Sorry.
De Niro.
No, Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, I was hearing Robert, and I was like, oh, Robert
I might
Downey,
have said
Robert
that
Downey.
Accidentally.
De Niro, yeah, he's fine. Best actress, we have Annette Bening in Naiad, Lily Gladstone in Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Huller for Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan in Maestro, and Emma Stone in Poor Things.
Got a couple Oscar winners in it. Well, Emma Stone's won an Oscar. I guess I was thinking Annette Bening had, but I don't think she did for American Beauty.
Oh, God, what a performance that was.
Yeah, she's always really good.
Yeah.
Man, the trailer for Naiad had my wife crying.
Just did
like,
it?
Man, just, I don't know if we can handle this movie if you can't even get through the trailer.
I don't even know what the movie is. I haven't seen the trailer. I know nothing about it.
About a woman who's trying to swim the English Channel or something, and she has some... I'm completely botching this. Maybe she has like a disease or something. Something is keeping her from doing it, but she's really driven to like do it and prove something, you know.
Okay, that sounds like an Oscar-worthy role.
Yeah.
I'm in the camp that wants to give Lily Gladstone the award, but also is torn on the fact that I'm really angry that so much of the role had her relegated to bed.
And didn't properly represent the real-life person.
Yeah. So there's something, like, I'm kind of annoyed that the movie... Because I see a lot of back and forth on Twitter with people being like, she didn't get to do enough. And then people being like, people saying Lily didn't get to do enough. And then they're showing the scenes of her like big emotional moments, which were really like good. Even her having to perform, like to act as sick as she was, is a really stellar performance as well. It's just so much of the movie relegates her to bed and gives agency to everybody else that I was kind of annoyed at it, and that we didn't get to see more from her perspective. Like, we have the one, how you said earlier, like 30 seconds in a 3.5-hour movie of the first person perspective with her giving voiceover. I was really hoping we were going to get more moments of that throughout the movie, and we really didn't. So there's part of me that really wants to give it to her because it was such a powerful performance, but then also feels torn because I feel like the movie underutilized the character in a lot of ways.
I completely agree.
I
think they cut her character short a little bit. And like, I'm thinking of how, like, in real life, she wasn't standing beside who's this guy's name? Ernest?
Ernest, yeah.
Like, while he was admitting to, like, killing her entire family, like, that, the fact that they have her, like, sit there and, like, stay loyal to him and decide, like, and then at the last moment, almost in an Oppenheimer-style move, like, give her the agency to suddenly be like, were you trying to poison me? And then Leo lies, and, like, that's when she turns on him. Like, that, to me, is just a really cheap... It's just a cheap move, and it completely undercuts the power of her character and limits what Lily Gladstone can do with the character. Like, they gave her less to do and made her a little more boring by making those decisions.
Yeah, it's was kind of a shame and kind of shocking, because you heard all the stories leading up to it that the movie was supposed to have a different approach. It was going to be focused more on the FBI, and he realized that he had to make it more about, you know, the Native American experience and really capture that. And Lily Gladstone was such a, like, a muse for him in that way. I felt a little jaded by it.
Yeah.
Which isn't her fault.
No. And but... she's great. And she's gonna have a career after this movie. So, like, this will be a launching point for her. And that makes me happy.
Yeah. So I feel a little torn. Like, I want to give it to her. I could also very easily see Emma Stone winning, because the Bella performance is so fascinating, and she's just always so good. And to me, it's one of those things that really, like, you get to see the range, you get to see the really the skill over the course of, like, the dimensionality of the character and the character growth. That's, I'm leaning that way too. A lot of people are favoring, like, Sandra Huller's performance in Anatomy of a Fall, and she has some really top-notch scenes, but it's another one that I feel so much of the movie's a little, she's relegated for parts of it to just being the defendant uh-huh, in the trial,
right?
That it's really the big moments that you're kind of reacting to, rather than all of the little things that she has to do across the movie in the way that Emma Stone has to.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like in all four of these acting categories, there's a clear winner that, like, everyone knows is going to win. Like, Divine Joy Randolph, Robert Downey Jr., Lily Gladstone. I think of all the categories and all of the Oscars, like, she kind of has it in the bag, it seems like. And, preview of best actor category, but I'm sure Cillian Murphy's gonna win.
Yeah, Cillian probably will take it, which I'm
I think he's great, and I think he's good in that movie. Like, I think that to me feels deserved.
Yeah, and you talk about, like, somebody that has always been good and is kind of a culmination of their career. Cillian Murphy's always kind of stood out in everything he's ever been in. He's just also never gotten to have this kind of prestige level role. Mm-hmm. So him finally having that opportunity, knocking it out of the park. And the other nominees are Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Colman Domingo for Rustin, Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, Cillian for Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. All doing, like, great work, but Cillian kind of commanding a 3-hour movie and having the range that he has.
It's math. Yeah. He had the most to do.
He had the most
to do. 3-hour movie.
Yeah. When the math of it all, when you boil it down to the hard numbers.
Thank God Leo is not nominated for this category.
I thought it was actually maybe Leo, not his, like, worst performance, because it's still, like, a good performance, but I think relative to the high quality, it was overacted at times.
Yeah.
And maybe the most kind of derivative of some of Leo's other characters.
I would agree. Just cursory look at movies from the year, people I think could have been nominated, like Greta Lee for Past Lives. Like,
oh yeah,
that would have been awesome. Who else we got here? You know what I would have done? And I legitimately think this isn't just like, I like this movie and it should have, like, I think I'm blanking on his name. I don't want to use his wrestler name. Who's the guy? Triple H's buddy. And why can I not remember his name? The guy who's in Guardians of the Galaxy and everything.
Oh, Bautista.
Yeah, Bautista. Dave Bautista. He's fucking awesome in that movie. I love him in that movie.
In which movie?
In Knock at the Cabin. Sorry, I probably never said that.
Yeah, you never said the movie. You never said
I was really in the dark there.
For Best Supporting Actor?
Yeah, Best Supporting Actor, for sure.
Yeah?
I don't think there's really a lead actor in that movie.
No, it's pretty ensemble. Pretty ensemble.
Yeah. Marshawn Lynch in Bottoms?
That was also a great role. I mean, Joaquin Phoenix in Beau's Afraid was still like such a massively impressive role to me. I guess it's one of those ones where it's like Joaquin Phoenix, so we kind of take him for granted. But if it was any other actor who's kind of like newer to the scene giving that performance, I think they might have been nominated. But Greta Lee for Past Lives is also something I wish would have happened.
Man.
And then
that is a shame.
I think Sandra Hüller in Zone of Interest is more impressive than Anatomy of a Fall.
Wow, she's in both those movies?
Yeah.
Look at her again.
She crushes it. She crushes it.
Also, the Megan creature in Megan, like, very underrated.
Yeah, is that a lead or is that a supporting?
I think that's supporting. The movie is named after her, though.
I know,
Best titular actor category. Like, if the character you're playing is the name of the movie, like, you get your own category.
Yeah, Cocaine Bear wins.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, if it was any other year, Megan would have had a shot.
I know. I didn't see Rustin, so I don't know how good of a job Coleman Domingo did, but the photos of Coleman Domingo going to award shows.
Best dress.
Such a sharp dressed man.
Yeah, they have a category for that, give him that.
And I'm still curious to see Maestro. I need to watch that soon, just to, like, before the Oscars, actually, so I can have an opinion on all of that.
I mean, I'm a fan of A Star Is Born.
Yeah, A Star Is Born was amazing. Yeah. Best Director, we have Justine Triet. Anatomy of a Fall, we have Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon, Nolan, Oppenheimer, Yorgos Lanthimos with Poor Things, and Jonathan Glazer, Zone of Interest.
Wow. Like, the epic movies versus, like, indie festival darlings. That's so funny.
Yeah. To me, it's hands down, far and away, no contest, Zone of Interest.
I've seen a Jonathan Glazer movie, so I have a hard time accepting that. That seems impossible to me.
It's just on such another level.
Although,
of
Best Director, like, to me, how do you look at the category Best Director, how do you determine who wins?
I guess to me, it's the math of the movie it really boils down to.
Of course.
Yeah. I'm thinking a lot about, I guess, how the degree of difficulty I kind of find in the movie, the style of the movie, what it's saying, how much it's going for. So there is like an element of scope and scale that I favor. So if you have, you know, a small movie that's well done, like Knock at the Cabin, versus something like Anatomy of a Fall, I'm really going to lean closer to Anatomy of a Fall, because it just feels like you have to balance more, you have to deal with more, you have to command a larger army in that way. So I'm more inclined to give it to the thing that has the higher floor and the higher ceiling than something that has like a high floor but a lower ceiling.
I just think it's the best movie. That's as simple as that for me. Like, the best, because as you're pointing out, the director does so many things. I mean, the director's in control of everything. If the end product is that stellar, like, transcends that much, like, that was the result of one person's work navigating all of these parties to make something. And to speak to your math equation point, like, math equations include subtraction as well. So, like, just because you're doing a bunch of shit doesn't mean a lot of the stuff you were doing wasn't done as well as this other person who did these couple things really well in their movie. Like, so I definitely don't think just like doing more means like you did the best.
No, but I'm assuming like a similar degree of quality. Like, if you think both things are good, then the one that had to do that on a larger scale is more impressive to me.
They might both be good, but what if one is way, way, way better?
I think we're taking, in this situation where we're talking about that, it's like the
objective
quality is similar.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I also think what you're speaking to is like is a little bit more of an objective way of looking at it. Like, well, like if this person did more, like not everybody likes Knock at the Cabin, but a lot more people seem to like Anatomy of a Fall and it does more. So like that gets it.
Yeah, I would say that that's like kind of a like a different like a difference maker to me. Like if we're talking about There Will Be Blood versus No Country for Old Men for best director or yeah, best director, like I'm probably going There Will Be Blood because as great as both movies are, There Will Be Blood just seems to have the higher degree of difficulty to me in terms of like the set, the story, the locations, like everything that it's navigating.
Right. Yeah. But that movie, like, see, to me, that's the difference. The difference between There Will Be Blood and a movie that has a ton going on, but isn't doing it as well, you know, like There Will Be Blood achieves that. Like it handles those things masterfully. Whereas like a lot of the times the movies get nominated for best director, they get something like Napoleon. Like there's more going on. Like he did more. But it isn't anywhere near like what someone like Paul Thomas Anderson did with more, you know?
Yeah. Like if you were to tell me like Napoleon versus Past Lives, Napoleon is doing so much more than Past Lives. But I think Past Lives is such a more superior
like
film.
Yeah. The movie, like Greta, or not Greta Lee, she's the actress in it. Celine Song.
Celine Song.
Like she captures such a specific haunting mood in that movie. Like that's a director's work. Like that is something she made and built. She communicated across with all of her actors, with the score, with the camera movement. Like that's all her doing.
Yeah, I think that also matters too, is that sense of style and that sense of like director authenticity that's coming through, where you get that voice.
Mm-hmm.
And if a film like Napoleon almost has no voice to me in a way, in terms of how much it's trying to not be a product. I mean, and it's very like Ridley Scottish in its tone, but you compare that to just kind of the directorial voice in Oppenheimer or Poor Things or Past Lives, and it's kind of a big difference to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I don't. I mean, it's silly because nobody, there is no consensus of like, it's not like people when they vote on the Oscars that year, it's like, all right, now everybody hears what we, when we think about, when we consider best director, like everybody has their own opinions for it.
Yeah. Which is why this is such an annoying.
And Christopher thing. Nolan's going to win, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Best Picture, American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killer of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, Zone of Interest.
Don't see Magic Mike's Last Dance in here.
I know. Surprising.
Of all these, my favorite is definitely Past Lives. Oppenheimer will definitely win.
Yeah, which is disappointing.
I can't see anything upsetting it.
Of the ones nominated, I think Oppenheimer's the worst of them.
No, not the worst for me, but second worst.
Yeah, Killers of the Flower Moon is the worst for you.
Yeah.
That's rough. Not even close to me. I mean, I found Killers like kind of boring at stretches, the same way I did Oppenheimer, but I got way more out of Killers than I did Oppenheimer.
I get that. I mean, you know, not much of a contest here. They're two shitty movies.
I wouldn't even say, like, I would give... I'd give Oppenheimer more of a negative score. Like Killers was like average to good to me.
Okay.
I don't know. But again, Zone of Interest is like such a, like, I think Zone of Interest is a genuine like masterpiece level work.
Yeah.
That's on that level of There Will Be Blood, that it should be like watched and talked about for years to come, decades to come. And then Past Lives and Poor Things, I think, would compete for the number two spot.
Mm-hmm.
There, and then Anatomy of a Fall, American Fiction, Barbie, Holdovers, Killers, Oppenheimer.
Seems weird that Barbie got so many nominations and then Greta Gerwig doesn't. Like, I don't, again, I just don't understand the thought process here.
For Best Director?
Yeah.
I mean,
Best Director. Yeah. I mean, that category of all the things she had to do and like all of the sets, and that seemed like a lot.
It did seem like a lot. To me, it was one of those things where I guess it's just the math of it. When I look at the other movies,
I was trying to get on your level, Chris. I was thinking about the math of it.
Yeah, they feel like bigger movies to me in that way of just they're longer. There's a little more intricacy with the character, like the dynamics and the characters. And
the Oscars are so dumb.
Having to organize everything. So I kind of get her not. Like, by the time I saw a lot of the other, like, top-tier Best Picture winners, I had Gerwig kind of off my Best Director list. But I wouldn't be mad if she was in over, like, Scorsese or Justine.
Yeah, I mean, she wouldn't be on my finalist either. I'm just thinking, like, of the people they're going to nominate, of the kinds of movies they're going to nominate, it makes sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm.
That would be cool if Barbie upset and won Best Picture, though. Hey.
Yeah, I would be.
That'd be weird.
I wouldn't be mad. I'd be surprised, but I wouldn't be mad.
Yeah.
And then part of me, as much as I like, am not a Nolan fan, I don't dislike him as a person, and he does work like incredibly hard, and as
yeah.
overrated as I think his movies are, that's not necessarily his fault. And he is one of the, like, the defining directors of the 21st century so far. So if he finally wins like Best Director and Best Picture, like, I'm not unhappy sure. about it on a human level. I'm mad about it on an artistic level, but I'm not mad about it on a human level.
And he seems to care about the material of Oppenheimer in a way that maybe he hasn't quite in his other movies. Like, he seems really passionate about this dude.
Yeah, so. Which it's funny because you heard the origin story of it.
Of Robert Pattinson giving him the book.
Yeah. Just funny, the little Robert Pattinson having such an impact on cinema over the years.
Yeah. Hey, Christopher Nolan should have won it for anything. It should have been Tenet. But hey, who am I to say?
That is something you would say.
Okay. All right, we did it.
What's the next movie we're covering? We said that previously.
You're supposed to pick.
Oh, I'm supposed to pick. Okay. I don't know what to pick. I was gonna look at Letterboxd, wasn't I?
You can look at Letterboxd. You can just look at what movies have been doing well, something you're excited to talk about. If you want to make me talk about Killers of the Flower Moon, you can.
I keep forgetting we did not do an episode on that yet.
You invented a memory that we did.
Yeah, I really did.
Someone Inception.
I mean, we could go old school and talk about one of these ones that we've already covered, like an American Psycho.
I've never seen it.
Wait. You've told me this before, right?
I've never seen it.
Have I known this? Have I not known this?
I feel like I've seen scenes from it, like I know it, but I've never sat down and watched it.
Oh God, okay, American Psycho. We're doing American
sure,
Psycho.
Yeah.
It's American
Psycho.
I'll
watch American Psycho. I mean, I love Christian Bale. So.
Okay, it was just his 50th birthday yesterday.
That dude is 50, fuck.
Yeah, so this one goes out to CB. All right, then.
Okay, American Psycho and, okay, Chris, we're at the end.
Yeah.
I sent you a text this past week, did I not?
You did.
And it was a text, a video I took of my computer, of us saying action at the exact same time.
See ya,
of course. Lights, camera. And Chris, you were totally right to call it out in the moment. I could have fudged that. I could have made these audio clips line up in any way I choose. But you could also see from the clip that we were speaking in it was lined up. Our audio was lined up. The waveforms, like you took a turn talking, then I took a turn talking. You can see it all there. It's evidence in the video. And at the end, we say see at the same time.
And yeah,
you have been adamant that I am sabotaging this podcast, that I don't care about the integrity of this moment, and that I don't deserve to be editing these episodes.
Well,
you said
the
all
last
that.
Thing is not, it was not you deserve to, because okay. I would not.
Okay, then that does make me deserve it.
But yeah, that kind of shocked me. It was so in line and so at the same time that I still don't believe it wasn't manipulated.
And you could be right.
Because everything else that we say on the phone call, on the Skype calls, we've done a lot of Skype calls and podcast recordings.
I agree.
It's you're reacting in real time to me finishing sentences and pausing.
It's happening right now.
It's happening right now.
Perfect flow.
So there's no way that we're in a perfect flow.
I agree.
Flow.
It is weird. But like, I can do is show you the evidence.
I'm being gaslit and manipulated. In front of our listeners right now.
I know. The humiliation.
God. All right.
All right. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Lights.
Camera.
See ya.
Hey.
We'll see. The computer will tell us.
That was closer. No, it won't.
Closer than exactly on? Okay.